This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
Guys, now as we begin here, I brought a little anxiety box. In this box are things that tend to cause us or could cause us anxiety. I don't feel relate to any of them. Here's one thing that causes, I think, a lot of anxiety. I think most of us relate to that. Here's one thing. Most of us do not like pain in any way. And I think this can cause anxiety. Let me see. Bills, most of us do not, you have a stack of bills, that'll do it. Boy, you're in relationship with somebody, and will she or won't she? You know, that can cause anxiety. How about just this, just a newspaper? Current events can produce anxiety. Now, finally, I have one other thing here, and I think this should symbolize something very, very specific, and so I'm just going to, let me see if I can get it here. Here it is. This symbolizes just all medical procedures, okay? A lot of stuff. I guess what I'm really saying here is that anxiety is always an option. That's the bottom line. It's always an option. If you don't know it yet, there's going to be some crises, some transitions, some challenges, some problems in your life. And the temptation is always going to be to let that problem produce anxiety in your life. And either that anxiety is going to master you, or you're going to master that anxiety. See, the life that Jesus gives us, life to the full, that's all about a life full of peace. And in fact, remember that Jesus told us while he was on the planet, John 14, look what he says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I don't give you as the world gives. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Don't be afraid." So Jesus, in the Gospels, makes it very clear. Peace is a part of the Christian life. This inner peace we're going to be talking about today. Now, what Paul does is he's going to back up Jesus' words. And he's going to tell us how to achieve that peace and how to work against anxiety. In fact, Paul is going to give us some practical strategies of how to push back anxiety and how to embrace God's peace. And as a matter of fact, remember, that is a part of the life to the full that Jesus talked about, this building block of peace. Strategy number one that Paul is going to talk to us about, and that is this: know the difference between worry and concern. And you're going to start in Philippians 4:6. Look what it says. Don't worry about anything. Now, I want us to stop there because we're going to be looking at all these verses. But I want you to see something here. When you read this, if you're a new Christian at first, you might say, well, is Paul pulling our leg here? Is he saying just paste a smile on your face and pretend as if problems don't exist? We are a little incredulous when we read something like this, because we don't know the difference between worry and concern. Now, I'm going to define worry this way, as just anxious expectation. And I want you to, with an emphasis on the word expectation, it's a kind of negative faith. It means that I am thinking, ruminating about this event to come or event that has happened, and I'm going to see it in the worst light. And so it's a kind of a negative faith. I begin just to let that dominate my thinking and become kind of the dominant reality in my life. Now, there is a difference between worry and concern. Look at the Bible recognizes that you're going to have concerns. In fact, look what it says in 2 Corinthians. Paul, the one who wrote Philippians, tells you about his concern. He says this: besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. So here's Paul, man. He is evangelizing the known world, and then all these new Christians are out there, and he wants them to follow Jesus. Man, that's a concern. I think you'd have the same concern. In fact, I think all of you today could fill in this blank. I face daily the pressure of blank. Couldn't most of you do that? You could say the same thing with Paul. I face daily the pressure. You know, some of you are sick. You're ill. We have a few people in our church today who have cancer. That's going to be of concern to you. If you have a marital problem, you're going to have concern about that. In fact, the second chapter of Philippians, Paul tells us about a concern. Look what he says. Therefore, I am all the more eager to send him so that you may be glad and that I might have less anxiety. Now, I want you to know this is a different Greek word for anxiety in this passage. This Greek word translated anxiety here has more the connotation of grief or sorrow. So the point still is, man, Paul was thinking about how to accomplish the task. He had a concern. So Paul wasn't saying in Philippians 4, you can never have a concern. He was saying, don't worry. Concerns are legitimate. Now, some of you are saying, well, all right, how would I know the difference between worry and concern? I mean, how do I know I'm straying over into worry? Well, there are three issues that I think are important. A legitimate concern becomes worry when, number one, it begins to dominate my life. I mean, it becomes all-pervading. That's what I think. I'm thinking about a problem. I'm trying to define it, okay. But then I go beyond that, and anxious thoughts dominate my thinking. Again, they become the dominant reality, where I see that problem as bigger than God, and it begins to dominate. It's all-pervading. Now, concern also becomes worry, and you see this on your outline, when it begins to destroy my perspective and it takes away my joy. Guys, do you realize that God wants you to view life as he does? He wants you to take an eternal perspective about life and about what happens to us. And in fact, what happens when we worry is that perspective narrows. And all we can see is that one thing in front of us rather than taking the full big picture. And in fact, I read this week again about a guy several years ago. He was a YMCA director. His name was George McCausland. And McCausland just was undergoing amazing pressure. Nobody was joining the club. They had financial problems. The staff was having problems, you know, toward each other. And he was working 85 hours a week. He was getting no sleep. He was just in pain. And he went to a doctor, and the doctor told him, listen, you're about ready to have a nervous breakdown. Well, McCausland's a Christian, you know, and he's thinking, oh, I don't think Christians should have nervous breakdowns. So he goes away into the Pennsylvania woods, and he just gets quiet, and he begins to feel the peace of God come into his life. And finally, what he does is he takes out a pad as he prays. He takes out a pad, and he writes, Dear God, today I hereby resign as general manager of the universe. Love, George. And what was he saying by saying that? He was saying, Lord, my perspective has been wrong. That is, I have just narrowed into my problems and forgot that you're the general manager of the universe. You see, you know something goes from concern to worry when your perspective changes and that issue becomes the dominant reality in your life. And finally, concern becomes worry when it produces nothing. And you know what? I want you to know, concern is usually productive. Worry is usually non-productive. Concern is usually active. Worry is usually passive. And as a matter of fact, worry simply takes on a burden without knowing what to do about it. How smart is that? Not very smart. That's why Jesus said, hey, can all your worries add a single moment to your life? Of course not. Jesus was just saying, hey, worry is not productive. It doesn't solve problems. I'm kind of fond of saying this. Some of you heard me say this. Worry is like a rocking chair. It will give you something to do, but it won't take you anywhere. That's exactly what worry does. The tragedy is that it's also unnecessary. Do you know that years ago I saw a study from a psychologist who was studying the whole issue of worry. Now, this guy was not a Christian, but he found out what people worry about, and he made a worry chart, and he charted what people worry about. The first thing he found out was this: 40% of what people worry about have virtually no chance of happening whatsoever. Just, it's not going to happen, guys, but they're still worrying about it. And after that, he found out that 30% of what we worry about are decisions that we have already made in the past and cannot now change. 12% dealt with other people's criticisms of us. Most of us like to be well-liked, do we not? And then 10% were worries about health. Now, here's what this non-Christian found out. Even if you don't know God, you can get rid of 92% of your worries right here. He found out that about 8% of worries were what he called legitimate. And he's not even a believer. But those of us who are Christians, man, can know a whole nother way of dealing with anxiety. It's really, again, I hate to, you know, since the World Series just finished, I want to quote a baseball player. I hate to do this, but what he says just cracks me up. His name is Mickey Rivers, and he was a baseball player in the 70s and 80s. And Mickey has this philosophy of life, and here's what he says about life. He said, "Ain't no sense worrying about things you got control over, because if you got control over them, ain't no sense worrying. And there ain't no sense worrying about things you got no control over either, because if you got no control over them, ain't no sense worrying." Okay? So I just thought, well, here's the guy who doesn't even know the Lord, who has, I think he's got some good things going on here. Matthew 6, Jesus agrees with him. Look what he says. "So don't worry about tomorrow." Again, Jesus, from Jesus through Paul, through all the epistles that were written, over and over again, bottom line, yes, you can be concerned about something. Go after it when you're concerned. Do something about it. But don't ruminate. Don't let it become the dominant reality in your life. There's only one dominant reality, and that's our Father in heaven. And that's the perspective that we need to take. So know the difference, and then begin to work in the strategies that I'll be talking to you about in these next few moments. Now, the second strategy is this, and it's probably the most key strategy. Number two, replace worry with prayer. Let it be your first reaction to problems, but also let it be your continuing reaction. Look what it says in verse 6. "Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need. Thank Him for all He has done." So what should our first response be in the midst of difficulties? It should be prayer. And prayer is a key ingredient to displacing worry. Prayer, of course, is talking to God. It's being with Him. It's being in His presence. It's having a two-way conversation. And when you are in prayer, you replace the tendency to let that issue dominate your life. You know, one of the greatest stress relievers in my life over the last 35 years has been my prayer times with my wife, Naomi. That is, anything going on in our marriage, man, anything that we're facing, any challenger we see ahead, we are in our prayer chairs and we're praying. And what happens when we do that? Wow, it's almost as if we take this big backpack off our shoulders and we say, "Here, Jesus, this is too heavy for us. You got it now." And we do it as a couple. So if you're married, you have this built-in prayer partner. It's been one of the biggest stress relievers of my life. And I want you to know something. Prayer and worry are exact opposites. Why? Because worry or anxiety denies the love of God. We say, well, He doesn't care. But prayer affirms the love of God. Worry denies the wisdom of God. We say, well, He doesn't know what He's doing. And yet prayer affirms the wisdom of God. And anxiety denies the power of God. We say, well, God's not doing His best for me. And prayer affirms the power of God. Now, some of you are going, "Art, this is all too simple. What do you mean I can get rid of anxiety through prayer?" Well, listen, look what it says. Don't worry, but number two, pray. And of course, as you pray, you may have to ask God to forgive you for being anxious. And don't forget that part. You may have to humble yourself and say, "God, I've been worrying about this thing when all the time I needed to come to You." But then after you take care of that, man, go on and make requests. Now, what kind of requests can you make? I'm going to say this. Anything that's a cause for anxiety is a cause for prayer. You just got to think of it that way. Anything that you're ruminating about, man, you can take to the Lord and need to take to the Lord. In fact, it reminds me of a story that I read years ago about Howard Hendricks. Howard Hendricks is a doctor of theology, and he was a professor. And one time he had a big name speaker over to his church, over to his house after church. This guy was visiting, and he had his 4-year-old son pray for the lunch. And so the little child, you know, prayed real briefly for the food. And then this kid said this: "Dear Jesus, please protect the fence in the backyard. Amen." And, you know, this big-time speaker kind of looks at Hendricks like, "Oh, aren't kids cute?" And, you know, like, kids don't know how to pray, and, you know, all this. And Hendricks turns and says, "No, you don't understand. On the other side of that fence is the biggest, meanest dog in the neighborhood. And my son prays every day, 'Lord, please protect that fence.' And I think that little 4-year-old has it together. Because instead of worrying about the back fence, he can pray about the back fence. And I'm gonna ask some of you, do you have fences that need protecting?" I think all of us would say, yes, we do. And therefore, come on, take those to God. Do you think God is interested in those fences? Of course he is. In fact, I love 1 Peter 5:7 in the Philip's translation. It says this: "You can throw the whole weight of your anxieties upon him, for you are his personal concern." I love that because, first of all, we can throw the full weight, you know, not just half the full weight. And we can know that it's going to be okay because, hey, we're his personal concern. There's no problem too big, no issue that we can't take to him. Do you know, according to the National Association of Mental Health, one out of every two patients seeking medical aid is suffering from an illness which was caused psychologically? That is, I mean, the illness is real, but it's just caused because of what's going on in here. It's called a psychosomatic disorder. So you're afraid or you're anxious, guess what happens? Adrenaline flows into the bloodstream, causes your heart to beat faster, and it causes, if you do that for a few years, it causes some physical problems. And in fact, I can tell you a time, I'm a pretty relaxed guy. I'm single-minded about purpose, but I'm pretty relaxed. But I'll tell you what happened to me. Some of you don't know that I was a school teacher for 2 years when I first got out of college. And my first year of teaching, something dramatic happened. In my right eye, I got a tick. Just every few seconds. Boom, boom. Just, oh. And I said, "Boy, this looks funny. I got to get rid of this." Went to the doctor. I said, "Doc, you see this?" "Oh, yeah." "What is that?" "That's a tick." "Really? Why is it there?" He said, "Have you been under any stress recently?" I said, "Yes, I've been a first-year teacher." "That explains it." Okay, that's all he told me. And he said, "Go home and don't be so stressed." I mean, that's kind of what he told me. It was worth the $20, I'll tell you. So all I'm telling you is any of us, this can happen to any of us at any time. You know, I haven't gotten any ticks since then that I know about. But hey, listen, I think probably even at that time, had I done a better job of going often to God and saying, "God, protect the fence back there," I think that tick might have been avoided. Now, interestingly, Paul tells us something about prayer. You know what he says? It's important also that our prayers should reflect thanksgiving. Now, some of you are going, "All right, come on, buddy, isn't it enough that I pray? Now you got to tell me I got to think of something to be thankful for. I'm in the midst of some real pain here, you know, and you're telling me to be thankful?" Well, I think life is interesting, isn't it? In the middle of the greatest downturn in the economy since the Depression, you can have your first grandchild born. Okay? Just at the time that you think that you can't stand that old refrigerator, one more moment, you realize, "Oh, I got a roof over my head and I've been eating pretty regularly." I mean, life is a mixed bag. And there's always something in the bag to thank God for. That's the bottom line. And if we choose to be grateful, you know what we do? We stop being self-centered. See, God has a little plan here. It isn't just that we give God glory, and that's right. It is right to give God glory. On the other hand, I can say, yeah, but what else does it do? It gets my focus off of me, and it reminds me how good God has been to me. And it makes a difference when it comes to the kind of self-centered absorption that I can do where I, again, just make this problem my dominant reality. No, no, no. Believe me, it's all about perspective. Thanksgiving brings perspective. Some of you are going, Art, you don't know my situation. Well, Philippians 4:4, always be full of joy. I mean, we don't have much. God's saying it here. 1 Thessalonians 5:18, give thanks in all circumstances. Now, some of you are going, in fact, I had somebody talk to me a couple of weeks ago, and they said, you know what? Another Christian is confusing me. They're telling me that if I break my ankle, that I should immediately thank God that I broke my ankle. And I said, no, 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 no. You don't thank God that you broke your ankle. You thank God that since you have broken your ankle, he's making provision for you in the middle of that. And that's all it's saying when it says give thanks in all circumstances. Let's not turn this into something weird here. These are acts of the will in which we say, oh, we can't buy everything for Christmas for our kids that we want to. And so instead of going, poor me, this is so terrible, we say, okay, God, this isn't what I would like, but thank you so much that we have a roof over our head or whatever you would do. So you see, it gets us out of this sense of being self-absorbed. Now, that's the second strategy, very important. Third strategy, though, comes right on its heels, and it's not as important prayer as prayer, but it's very important. Third strategy is this: just monitor what you're thinking and choose thinking that's consistent with God's truth. Look what it says in these verses, verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. The New King James says, meditate on these things. The bottom line is, man, to reduce stress, to be at peace, you've got to change the way that you think. Because stress is right here. It's not out there. It's in here. Stress is not external. Stress is internal. It's what's happening in my mind and heart. You can see this in all kinds of small and large ways. Do you know that often, guys, we experience so much stress over small stuff? Would you agree with that? I mean, we forget something at work that we meant to bring home. Oh, you know, we're all bent out of shape, you know. We are going somewhere, and the traffic is heavy, and we're not going to get there precisely on time. Well, we're just stressing. We all, you know, many, many times, they're just small things that we allow to change our thinking. In fact, let me tell you something that happened to me a couple weeks ago. I don't even know why I'm telling you this, because it's embarrassing. But I think I will anyway. Some of you know that Nam and I, my wife and I, have been taking ballroom dancing lessons every week for several years now. And it's our date night, you know. And so one night, a couple weeks ago, I was at the studio, and they had a dance, and in the between the dance, they were doing demonstrations, just individual people who would dance and everybody would watch. And so this teacher said to me, well, all right, why don't you and I do a demonstration of a mambo? And I said, okay, you know, I like to perform well, but I think I can do that. Okay, fine. And then right before we got up, one of the other teachers said, no, it's not a mambo, it's a tango. And, you know, I'm not a great tango dancer anyway. But then when you say it right now, you know, have you ever had your brain freeze? Anybody, you know what a brain freeze is? Where they say this now or do this now, and you're going, you know, you somehow learned it, but you can't remember anything. So what I did is, you know, I just had to make mistake after mistake around the floor and be made a fool of. Okay, that's what happened. Now, The teacher came over to me and said, "All right, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that was happening." And I was gracious to her and said, "Hey, no problem. It was not your fault at all. Don't even give it another thought." That's exactly what I said to her. Don't give it another thought. And then I walked out the door a few minutes later and gave it thought. You know, and I'm driving back home going, "I was such a fool. Everybody thinks I'm a terrible dancer. This is so bad." You know, and think about how stupid that is. Is that stupid? That's stupid. I mean, that's, but it's one of those small things. It's what a lot of our anxiety and tension and stress is about, stuff like that. Now, having said that, you know, I got my thinking right on it eventually. I got my thinking right. Oh, who cares what some, if that, maybe everybody thinks you're, maybe you are a bad dancer. But then, even if you're not, maybe everybody thinks you're, is that okay? Yeah, it's okay. You know, I got perspective on the thing. But I want you to know, yeah, there are a lot of small things that go wrong, but I understand there are a lot of big things too. Some of you are facing monumental problems and issues that seem overwhelming, but Paul's words still hold true. Fear, worry, anxiety, all those things, all the countless concerns that bombarded even these Philippians Christians' minds. What is Paul telling them? Come on, get your mind on things that are true. Get your mind on things that really are good. Remember to tell yourself the truth and don't let a lie wreck your perspective. Don't do it. Now, some of you are saying, "Well, Art, you know, you're telling me that my emotions aren't right." Well, yeah, your emotions are fine. But remember, you are not under the mercy of your emotions. Because emotions happen for a reason. Think about it. Here's two people in a car coming toward the dentist. One from South Hill, one from North Hill. Identical situation, correct? So if they have the identical situation, then they should be experiencing the same emotion, if emotions just are. If emotions just happen and you don't have any control, then if two people go to the dentist on the same day, they should experience the same emotions, correct? Well, do they? No, this guy's going, "Oh no, I hate the needle. I'm going to be numb for hours. People are going to slap me. I won't even feel it. It's going to be so bad." You know, this guy's going, "Oh, I'm going to the dentist. A little bit of pain. Too bad, it'll be uncomfortable. I'll be okay." That's why they're each experiencing a little different emotion. So two people experience different emotions. Why? Because they tell themselves something different. And what's going on in their mind and heart begins to affect their emotion. It's not so much what happens to me. It's how I evaluate what happens to me. It's what I tell myself about what happens to me. You know, if this whole church got, each of you got a slip for an audit next year, the auditor's coming. I guarantee you there would be a bell curve of stress throughout the congregation. And the guy on this end would be going, "Oh no, I'm going to jail," you know. And the guy on this end would be going, "Oh yeah, I'm going to do my best. God will help me. I'm sure the Lord will be involved here. I'll do my best. I'm sure that, you know, there'll be not going to be a problem in any of this." So all I'm saying here is that what we think, what we let ruminate in our minds, makes all the difference in the world. Now, by the way, if you tend to worry about things that are pending, here's another little thing you can do. You don't have a lot of control over them, but they're pending and you tend to worry. Make this rule. If you're thinking about that problem produces something concrete, allow it to go on. But if you've been thinking about an issue for 5 minutes and nothing is coming to mind about what to do about it, then shift into the prayer gear. "Okay, Lord, obviously nothing productive is happening here. I'm going to need your help on this. I can't do anything about it. I submit it to you." And just stop, in other words, replace that anxiety with prayer. The scripture says, "Let your mind dwell on what is true and noble and right." And there are a lot of different meanings to that. It means in general, of course, don't let your mind go to the garbage in life. But it also can be applied in this way, that anxiety is something that we don't have to let ruminate around there. It doesn't have to happen. Now, some of you are going, Art, are we avoiding problems? Are you saying we have to avoid? No, don't avoid problems. We already talked about the difference between concern and anxiety. So you do something about things you're concerned about, and you know what to do, and it's clear. In fact, that brings us to our fourth point. Just simply be active and do what Jesus tells you. Now, we don't have a lot of time left, so I can't spend a great deal of time here, but I want you to know is God doesn't want us to ignore our problems. Of course he doesn't. You remember when Jesus was at a wedding and in John 2, and his Mary was there, and they ran out of wine? And that'd be like having no in our culture, that'd be like having no wedding cake. We have no wedding cake, you know? And so Mary goes to Jesus and says, we have no wine. And so what does she do? He says, well, fill these cisterns with water. She just does what she tells him, what he tells her to do. And I think often there's going to be something that Jesus is going to tell you to do in the midst of some concern. And if you're not hearing anything in prayer, please go to the Word of God and see what the Word of God would say. There's almost always something to do. You're out of a job. Man, there's something to do. There's writing resumes. There's getting online. Your children are having problems in school. There's something to do. You can talk with teachers. You can consider a tutor. There's always something to do. In fact, one of the biggest helps that you have in anxiety is action. And so when you can't do action, when it doesn't allow for action, you know, even more prayer is required. Now, finally, that brings us to the fifth strategy, and just receive his peace. Verse 7 tells us what all, you know, what we get when we employ these strategies. And so this really isn't a strategy. It's more of just something we receive. But look what Jesus says, or what Paul says in Philippians 4. And God's peace, which is far beyond human understanding, will keep your hearts and minds safe in union with Christ Jesus. My friend Alice Gonzalez, I have other friends, Joe and others who have cancer. And you know what they will often, if you ask somebody, a Christian who's following Jesus, you ask Alice, you know, how her cancer's going, she'll almost always say something like, well, you know what? I'm in treatment and everything is okay. I've got God's peace and he's walking with me through this. Guys, that's what I call peace that passes human understanding. Wouldn't you say that? It passes human understanding. Now, peace in general, you can say throughout the Bible, is just an inner sense of calm, an inner sense of serenity that comes from God. And certainly that's contrasted with anxiety that Paul's been talking about here. But I want you to notice something. This peace, this term, the peace of God, it seems to imply that this is serenity that characterizes God's very nature. In other words, this is not just peace that comes, you know, from God, but it's the peace of God. So do you think God worries at all? Think God worries? I don't think so. So if you had the very same peace that he has, would you worry? I don't think so. You see, that's what's being talked about. You have the peace of God. Now, the last part of this verse is so encouraging. You see the Greek verb there for guarding your heart? See that term, guarding your hearts and minds? The Greek phrase is a metaphor being used there. It's a military term which pictures God's peace as a detachment of soldiers standing guard over a city so as to protect it from harm and attack. And what this passage says, this metaphor is, God's peace is like a garrison of soldiers that'll guard over your thoughts, guard over your feelings, so that you will be safe against the assaults of worry and fear. This metaphor just brings it home. And it says the peace of God that you can receive from God will be like a garrison of soldiers. This peace acts to guard your thoughts and guard your mind. And that's God's promise for each one of us. Now, friends, I think it's possible, sometimes when we get through difficulties, you know, we have a difficulty going on, a real pain, then some well-meaning friend or family member says, oh, come on, don't worry, it'll be okay. And we're going, what, you nuts? You know, I'm going through this pain, you're saying it's going to be okay? What are you talking about? Now listen, your family member, your friend, They were trying to help you. Maybe they didn't help you very much. But look at these words. These words don't come out of thin air. These words are true. And what it's, these are God's truth. And what does it say? Find the place of peace that Paul talks about here. And find it, yes, through prayer and grateful prayer. Find it, yes, through dwelling on what is true and noble and good. Yes. Find it through action when it's applicable. But mostly, receive it too. As you pray, receive it. And in fact, right now, that's my goal for you today, that walking out, you'll have received God's peace.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.